like I think a few of the others here down the stretch of this class, Celeste needs to cover one lesson on the book of Hosea. So we'll look at that this morning. Again, our title slide here has sort of our theme verse, which fits in just as well with Hosea as with the narrative in the book of Kings, that the Lord had warned Israel and Judah through the prophets. And Hosea is one of the most prominent specific prophets that we know about that this verse would speak of. Warn Israel and Judah through the prophets, turn from your evil ways, observe my commandments and decrees in accordance with the entire law that I commanded your ancestors to obey. But they would not listen, right? They were as stiff-necked as their ancestors who did not trust in the Lord. Hosea's prophecy that we'll read through this morning fits exactly this description. So this, I believe, is lesson 11 today. We'll go through Hosea. Sewell, do you want to speak to what we'll do on Wednesday and then the following Sunday just to conclude the class?
Next Wednesday, we'll go through the final kings and the defeat by Assyria. And then on the following Sunday, next Sunday, I'd like for us to look at the history of the Samaritans and then all through the centuries, right on down into the time of Christ.
Okay. All right.
And the apocryphal too.
Right.
Very interesting.
Right. Okay. So this is a map that we
the fulfillment of some of this that we study in Hosea.
Sure. Okay. So this is a map that we've seen before. Again, so Samaria has been the capital of really the northern kingdom of Israel here in the pink. They have been in sort of this back and forth battle with the Syrians or Aram here that has had Judah, you know, more or less involved in it as well throughout the time period. I've added a couple of dates here. So we've been talking about some of these prophets, so Jonah and Amos and today Hosea, in alignment with the reign of Jeroboam II, which is in 2 Kings chapter 14, and Jeroboam, like all of the kings of Israel, is described unfavorably by the writer of Kings through the Spirit. This is God's assessment that Jeroboam II, even though he expanded some of the territory in these northern areas of Israel, ultimately. Both he and his immediate descendants. I think there's only about three other kings after him until Israel is finally taken away in 722. Hosea is prophesying sort of right in between this period, right, all the way up to the final captivity and exile of Israel by the Assyrian Empire. I added another map that I found here. This is a wider view that shows really kind of the Assyrian Empire and the Assyrian captivity and exile of the people. You know, Assyria had been sort of this pinkish color here for a long while, and then the green is where they started to expand their territory right around the time period that we're talking about. In fact, this map is probably pretty conservative in that Assyrian Empire actually comes further over here into the west even. But some of these lines are some of the deportations of the people of Israel, and you can see that they're taken into these far off lands here. And actually, we'll see a little bit of connection if we can get to it this morning with some of the other places that some of the ancient fathers of Israel had sort of made this trip to. There will be sort of a joke that Hosea mentions about that at one point. So this is just sort of a preview of where we're getting to. culminating in 722 is the deportation of Israel into all of these eastern. Israel would have thought of these look more north to us. Israel would have thought of this as the east, right? Taken off into the east. Okay. So, let's talk a little bit about Hosea the prophet, and then Hosea the book.
So Hosea is a prophet prominently to the northern kingdom of Israel. He will tie in some of the things. If you've read through it, there are a number of places in this book where either the accusation or the oracle of judgment is made against Israel, and then right after that he has just sort of a quick thing about Judah too. So his prophecy is predominantly to the north, but it's as if he's sort of aware that, you know, at some point this is going to happen to the southern kingdom of two, and he wants to tie into it. He's often going to refer to Israel as Ephraim. This is a fairly common thing. The reason why, going back to here, is Ephraim is the area of the nation that would have involved, or that would have included Samaria, and it's this area of the nation that would have had a lot of the prominent cities like Bethel and Gilgal. You'll read about those as well. This is the place of a lot of the activity that he is going to prophesy about. So he's a prophet to the northern kingdom. He's prophesied in between this time period of about 760 to 725. In chapter 1, verse 1, it says that the word of the Lord came to Hosea in the days of Kings Uzziah and Jotham and Ahaz and Hezekiah of Judah. So it leaves that sort of marker there, that there's a number of kings throughout the period of this time for the nation of Judah. And in the days, it says, of King Jeroboam, son of Joash of Israel. If I didn't put a chart up here, but if you do sort of the alignment of where all of these kings fall, it seems pretty clear that he's prophesying in the reign of King Jeroboam and also King Jeroboam's just immediate descendants, all the way down through the last king of Israel is a king named, this is a little bit confusing, Hoshea. Sounds like Hosea. Hoshea. And he's the one that actually Shalmaneser comes in from Assyria and takes them away. Really, because if you read 2 Kings 17, he finds out that Hoshea is trying to make a deal off to the side over here with Egypt to kind of get out of paying him tribute, and Syria doesn't like that, and so they're like, all right, that's the last straw. So Kings Jeroboam to Hoshea, you can read about those in 2 Kings 14 to 17, and up through the period of King Hezekiah in Judah. So there's a time reference of that. And I think this is interesting, just from a little bit of a biographical note that might shed some light on some of the things that we read about through the 13 chapters of this book. I read a proposal that Hosea is of a traditional Levite class of people. So let me just sort of read this. A little bit of a lengthy read, but this is interesting. Hosea appears to have operated out of membership in a traditional priestly lineage, the Levites, whose forebears had lost their stations at old Israel's traditional shrines with the rise of the northern monarchy. So if you read through 2 Chronicles 11, this is Jeroboam takes out the old Levite priests and replaces them with his own appointed new class of priests, right? Basically relegating the Levites, which God had ordained, to just kind of the side. He basically kicks them out. Having experienced disenfranchisement, the Levites subsisted on society's fringe until the great reforms of King Hezekiah and King Josiah in Judah. And in that passage from Chronicles, you read that many of the Levites just went, many of the Levites who were in those northern territories went down into the southern kingdom. But some of them, like Hosea, would have remained. And Hosea sort of turns into a prophetic role in which he's going to comment about the state of these priests, these royally appointed priests. Hosea's language and thought fit a bygone era when Israel lacked the monarchy and organized itself based on family ties and kinship. His prophecies reflect confusion and conflict among the Israelite people as their traditional village-based and lineage-based society regrouped and entrenched itself as a centralized state, which is a fancy way of saying, instead of being the people, you know, the tribal people that God had brought them into the land as, they wanted to have a king, and they sought power, and they sought alliances with other idolatrous nations and their gods. And so you've got this influx of political alliances with foreign nations and the adoption of their gods like the Baals, and all of this sort of comes into the culture of Israel. And this is the kind of thing that Hosea obviously is fighting against in his words. Alienated from society's new hierarchical arrangement, Hosea confronted apostasy at the royal capital of Samaria and the royal sanctuaries of Bethel and Gilgal as a dissident. He's basically, he's a foreigner in his own land, right? In many ways. And it's interesting that as you read through this, there are a number of places in Hosea's prophecy where he's going to openly criticize this royally appointed priesthood that exists in places like Samaria and Gilgal and Bethel. And so there's just a number of references here, and you can look through those and just note the number of times Hosea brings up the priesthood, right? This is not the traditional Levitical priesthood. This is the new form of priests that were instituted and imposed by these power-hungry kings in Israel. Okay, so now let's talk about Hosea the book, right? That's a little bit about Hosea as we know him, the prophet. Let's talk about Hosea the book. Like many of the books of the minor prophets that we have, this is a collection of Hosea's prophetic messages, right? And one of the difficult things about reading through a book like Hosea is the chapter divisions don't really tell you the proper, like, divisions of the book, right? There's a lot of places where what you actually have is, you know, the beginning of sort of a new unit or a new, well, so we'll say it this way. Almost all of what we read about in Hosea is his prophetic messages transmitted into poetry, right? If you'll notice, and some of your Bibles might mark this out through the way that they format it, really, you've got in chapter 1 is this sort of frame narrative story about Hosea taking on this adulterous wife, right? And then there's a little bit of a conclusion to that story in chapter 3. Everything else in the book, other than those two chapters, which actually is Hosea's prophecy, has been transmitted into poetry, right? So what you've got here is sort of a collection or a summary of Hosea's prophecy in poetic form, and so that's what you get in this book. And sometimes it can be difficult to sort of read through, not only because poetry is hard and Hebrew poetry is doubly hard, but the chapter divisions don't really help us at all to be able to say, all right, here's the beginning of a new unit. We'll try to put a broad parameters around that. But here are the basic messages, right? Here are the basic messages. And this is you know, typical of most of the prophets that you'll read through in the Old Testament. Old Testament prophecy consists of the messages that Israel's going to be judged, and there's still hope for restoration, right? You get both of those. So the messages of this book are that Israel has abandoned God in a number of ways, as we'll see. Israel has abandoned God, and as a result, God is going to punish Israel for their actions. There is this, it's not even so much a theme, it's just this thing that pops up at really unexpected but important places in this book. That God's love for Israel is more powerful than their sin. Now, that doesn't cancel out this notion that God's going to punish Israel. In fact, it's almost heartbreaking that even though this is true, this still happens. And you can feel sort of the heartbreak in Hosea in key places in this book because of it. But this is just sort of a summary of some of the messages here. Here's just sort of a basic outline. So chapters 1 through 3 is probably what Hosea as a prophet and as a book is most known for. This account of him taking a wife, knowing that she is an adulteress and that she is going to be unfaithful. And yet God calls Hosea to take this person as his wife. And then, even after the fact, calls Hosea to call her back even after her actions. So chapters 1 through 3, we'll take a deep dive into that in just a moment. And then the rest of the book is really just sort of two big blocks of accusations and warnings about what Israel has done and what's going to happen to them. But in that, and those two sections are chapters 4 through 11 and then chapters 12 through 14. But at the conclusion of both of those, you have these images of the call for repentance and the expression of God's love for Israel in a couple of key ways. In chapter 11, it's God as the Father, as the loving Father of Israel. And in chapter 14, this image of Israel as a garden that God wants to cultivate and grow and bear fruit from. But actually, the first thing I want to look at in this book is the very end of it, because you have something pretty unique in this book among all of the prophets in terms of the way that this book ends. So I'm going to read chapter 14, verse 9. It says, "Those who are wise understand these things. Those who are discerning know them. For the ways of the Lord are right, and the upright walk in them, but transgressors stumble in them." Now, if you didn't know that this was in Hosea, where would you think that was from? What does it sound like?
Proverbs.
Yeah, it sounds like a Proverbs, or maybe something that comes out of like Ecclesiastes. Or actually, you know what it sounds like? It sounds like Psalm 1, right? If you go back and read Psalm 1, this notion that those who follow the way of sinners will fail, but those who meditate on the Lord day and night, that God will uphold them. This is pretty strange, actually, for a statement like this about the wise man and the upright walking in the ways of the Lord. The language here is pretty unique for the prophets, and it's really strange that something like this would end a book. Most of the time with the collections of the prophets that we have, these books just sort of, they feel like they end abruptly to us, right? Just because, you know, the point of the book is just to kind of give us, you know, the greatest hits of the prophets, right? And, you know, there's no sort of concluding thing, much like if you had an album of, you know, a particular band or musical artist's greatest hits. There's no like last track at the end that explains what all of them are about, right? You just get to the last song and that's it. That's the way that most of the prophets end. Hosea has got this one verse sort of appended onto the end of it, as if someone who was compiling all of this or was writing it down sort of stuck this in to be able to say, look, I know all of this is about Israel and the way that they're going to be taken away by Assyria. But if you read between the lines of Hosea's prophecy, the wise people who read this and understand it are going to know about the righteous ways of the Lord and the way that those who don't abide by the word of the Lord will stumble and fall through them. So this is just a really interesting way that this book ends that I think it's worth calling attention to. It invites us, I think, to be able to say there's got to be something more to this book even for us today, right? This is the old sort of adage that even though this book is not written to us, it's written for us, right? So hopefully we'll get to that at the end of the class this morning. Let me see what we're doing on time. Okay. All right, so let's go through just the first three chapters, right? This is probably the most famous thing about the book of Hosea. If you know anything about this, you probably know something of this. So let's go with the tried and true method of breaking into groups and answering some questions. Let's go left side of the room. From Doug over, you can take read chapter 1 all the way actually through chapter 2 and verse 1. And then the back side of the room from the colonels back, will you guys read chapter 2, verses 2 through 13? And then everyone from David and Sewell forward, you guys will read chapter 2, verses 14 to 23. Just take a few minutes on that and consider the questions under here. This side, remember we said chapter 1 is mostly like the frame narrative, right? This is just going to explain what this is about. And then the two groups for chapter 2, this is the actual poems of prophecy that we're going to read through. So consider the questions here under your group. Just take a couple of minutes and read through that. Consider those questions, and then we'll go through that. So, yeah, so for the first question there, really the question is, what does God call Hosea to do?
No, I was asking, I'll read the first three questions there.
Yes, yes. These are actually much simpler questions. You're just being asked to describe it. They're going to have to actually do some critical thinking. So let's go through in this first group. This is just sort of setting the scene for what we're going to read through in chapter 2, but this gives us a pretty dramatic picture of what Hosea is called to do. So what is it, you know, with most of the prophets, you have God coming to the prophet, declaring their word. There's some sort of dramatic activity. Sometimes it's a vision, sometimes it's something else. What's Hosea called to do? What's his prophetic calling to do?
Well, he's actually calling out Israel.
Yep.
And he's told to go marry a harlot.
Right.
And he does.
Yeah. I maybe you'd rather see a vision or what's the one where like he has to like put a hot coal to his mouth, right? Is that Jeremiah?
Yeah.
So maybe you'd rather do that. You're asking me to do what?
I think there's a slight possibility that the idea is not to marry a woman who is already a harlot, but to marry a woman out of an adulterous generation where that's so common it's almost certain to happen.
Yeah, and that could be the case too. In fact, because what happens here is, so it seems fairly clear here with the way that the children of this marriage are described, that the first one of these is certainly Hosea's child, but perhaps the second and the third are not Hosea's child. Hosea has to raise them as the father, even though he's not really the father, as it were. So this is a pretty dramatic opening to this book. God calls Hosea to go out and marry this woman who either is or will be a harlot and will be an adulteress. And then there are these three children. So I know I heard some complaining about how to pronounce these names, and I totally get that. You know, maybe take your best stab at trying to explain the names of these children and what they mean. Because I heard some good discussion here about being able to discern from the footnotes and things like that what these names mean.
Well, the first one was Jezreel.
Right?
And he called that because he's going to end Jehu.
Right. So this whole idea of Jehu had tried to take over the throne, and it's his descendants that are Jeroboam the second, right, and the current king of Israel. And he says, name him Jezreel. This is the first child. Name him Jezreel. I will punish the house of Jehu for the blood of Jezreel, and I will put an end to the kingdom of the house of Israel. That word Jezreel means God scatters, in the sense of he's